So I'd like to start out by welcoming everybody to the Connecting Kids Exploring Diversity Together sessions. Everybody in the right place? Okay. And it's very wonderful for me to be at a conference where our connections with our children are so highly valued. I'm just absolutely thrilled. When I got the package for the speakers that has this list of, it's called cultural sensitivity reminders, and it's got things like speak clearly and distinctly and be geographically specific and those kinds of things for people coming from other places, but it's got a specific cultural sensitivity reminder about children, and I just think it's wonderful. It says, if this is the first time you're presenting at a La Leche League event, you will notice the gentle background noise from the babies and children in attendance. They are an important, welcome, and enjoyable part of all La Leche League activities. So I just think it's absolutely fabulous to be part of the revolutionary work that we're doing together in bringing children back into our mainstream culture. So, and it is pretty revolutionary, sad to say. I'm also very pleased, and one of the main reasons, you can come on in, one of the main reasons that I agreed to come down from British Columbia to San Francisco, actually too, my son lives here, so that's great. But another reason is that it is a conference that honors breastfeeding. The community that I live in, which is called Duncan is the little town, and then the surrounding area is called the Cowichan Valley. We've been trying to set the world record for the most women in one place breastfeeding for the past 2 years. We haven't made it yet. But it's a wonderful consciousness-raising activity because it brings up the importance of breastfeeding. It's our public health nurses are very involved in it, and we get lots of media coverage, and then lots of people do come together. The first one, I think we had over 200, and the next one, it was down a little bit, but we're going to keep working on it. And it's just so wonderful. It's just, you know, celebrating breastfeeding. Breastfeeding is so important, as all of you know, who are the movers and shakers in the breastfeeding movement. It's such a great tool for promoting the development of a positive relationship between mother and child, and between parents and children, and for building that. And it's not only nutrition, it's that safety and that nurturing and everything that goes along with that close physical relationship. And so in this workshop, I'm focusing on two more very important tools for parenting, and I'm really glad to see a man in the audience. I was hoping some dads would come. I'm assuming you're a dad. You might not be. Okay. because dads are so important, especially for our, well, dads and men, positive role models, especially for our boys. Boys model off of men. They don't model after a certain age. Boys stop modeling very much off of women, and it's a natural thing. I lived in the South Pacific and really noticed it there, where boys more and more and more are looking for their male role models, towards their male role models for guidance, and so the more that we have, the better for all of us. So the two tools that I'm going to be focusing on today, if I can get over the static. Yay, there's a technician here. One is, and I'll just get you to put that transparency on. Woohoo! Okay, so this is a picture of an inclusive travel guide, which I'm hoping by the end of this you will all consider yourselves to also be inclusive travel guides. I'll be using that phrase a lot. And so the two tools that we're talking about are cooperative play and shared laughter. And I'm also focusing on building skills. Skills that are needed to guide children through cooperative play and shared laughter, to explore diversity and to connect with each other's differences in positive ways, and to also help us learn to do that, because we can't pass those skills on to our kids unless we've got them ourselves. I've recently come across a document called the Earth Charter, and for me it puts all that I value into one place, so I got some copies of it and thought you might be interested in taking a look at it. So it's here, and I just want to read the preamble. So I think it sets the context this workshop and what's my passion. And I think a lot, I've talked to a few people here, and it sounds like there's a lot of people who share my passion. I sat in Marshall Rosenberg's workshop yesterday evening and listened to when the clapping happened, and it was exactly when I was going to clap. So, you know, he talked about cooperative learning, and everybody clapped, and talked about communication, of course, everybody clapped. So the context that I think we're all in is we stand at a critical moment in Earth's history. So I'm reading from the Earth Charter, just the preamble. A time when humanity must choose its future. As the world becomes increasingly interdependent, remember Marshall used that word, interdependent, as the world becomes increasingly interdependent and fragile, the future at once holds great peril and great promise. To move forward, we must recognize that in the midst of a magnificent diversity of cultures and life forms, we are one human family and one Earth community with a common destiny. We must join together to bring forth a sustainable global society founded on respect for nature, universal human rights, economic justice, and a culture of peace. Towards this end, it is imperative that we, the peoples of Earth, declare our responsibility to one another, to the greater community of life, and to future generations. I think that the use of the words, I've been thinking about it since Marshall's workshop, the use of the words must and being imperative in this document, I think they're calling forth not an obedience to authority, but a drive for service, to take action, coming out of love. And I think we're very fortunate in the midst of this great promise and great peril. We are actually living in the very first time in the history of the world, this new millennium, when dealing with diversity has become a part of our everyday lives. It's the very first time in the history of the entire world when the human community has started to look at diversity issues every day, where that word diversity is starting to be learned. It just means differences. So we're living in a time when children and youth and adults of all different abilities, cultures, races, languages, lifestyles, all sorts of backgrounds, we have more opportunities to interact with each other than ever before. And this has especially happened during the 20th century, especially since the Second World War, but it was already starting to happen with the all the various revolutions that were going on, the Industrial Revolution and all the different, all the things that are happening to turn us into a global village. So throughout the 20th century, all these opportunities to interact and to connect and to build positive relationships, they've energized many, many people. They've energized families, they've energized whole groups and entire communities to have conferences called things like Strength Through, through Diversity. You know, think of the power of those words, of what we're at. In this conference, at the 18th La Leche League conference, strength in diversity. So we're involved in a shift, and the shift is involving entire societies, and we're shifting away from what used to be commonplace. It used to be commonplace to exclude and devalue anyone who was different. And the shift is towards inclusion and valuing, towards including, which just means being welcoming, and valuing, which means enjoying, liking, thinking is important, and valuing people from different backgrounds. And when you think about any kind of shifts, any kind of revolution, it's fragile. This process of becoming interdependent, we're walking on fragile ground. The steps that we're taking are new. And the way forward is filled with great peril as well as great promise. So what I'm using the term inclusive travel guides, what I'm referring to is people who have learned skills for thinking globally and acting locally. And what we do is we guide inclusive leadership adventures. We see life as an adventure, which is as exciting as traveling to different countries around the world. So I've got the backpack there, which we've picked up, and inside we've got cooperative play and shared laughter and a whole bunch of communication skills. And we enjoy exploring, sharing, and celebrating differences, and we enjoy guiding children and youth and other adults to do the same thing. And we do this, we apply the tools of play, and we apply the tools of shared laughter to build bridges. So I talk about building bridges across differences. It's a metaphor that I use a lot. Because the ground is fragile. You can't just walk on it. You can't, you know, if you try to walk across a great chasm where there's a river there, you're going to sink down and not be able to do it. So you have to do some work to build that bridge across those differences before you can get across. And then what we're doing as inclusive travel guides is we're learning and we're getting better and better at guiding children, youth, and adults, starting from as early as when our kids are born. We're crossing these bridges and we're crossing them in ways that are safe and respectful. And these bridges lead towards choice and fun. We don't really know where they go because it's choices, eh? And I'll go to the next transparency. And so all along these bridges, there's viewpoints. And these bridges are showing our differences as gifts that enrich our communities. There's lots of chairs up here. If you have a hard time seeing that and want to move up, you're very welcome to. So what I'm going to do first is show you a brief clip of an inclusive leadership adventure that I recently guided along with a number of other people. This is an adventure for youth and adults who care about youth. It'll give you an idea of what I'm talking about, a visual picture. So we'll start that.
Can I do another story about that? I've spent the last few days at Kellison Lake. The reason they're there to help learn how to stop racism and discrimination using some unconventional playful methods. The fun-filled proactive conference is leading up to the International Day to Eliminate Racism. That is this Friday. Here is videographer April Butler Perry. We live in a very, very diverse society now. Our youth are going to schools with all sorts of different kids, and they need skills to be able to embrace those differences.
Don't let the party get and jump right in.
Basically, you say I'm not. To me, it's important to connect with youth. I like the ideologies behind the conference for my family, but also working with youth in the community.
It's the third and last day of this conference, and this group of young people is going to use multicultural dance to bridge the differences. They're celebrating their diversity, but making it a lot of fun. Are you guys showing what you're doing?
It's okay to be different and giving kids a voice and being different, but they don't all have to be the same to be part of something. They can all be different and bring their differences to the table.
I think it's important because I think everyone should like get along. You say like, worried about like the comments and stuff, but everybody should like come together.
I've learned how to share my feelings because I'm usually a really quiet person and speak out on what I, you know, believe in and what I want to talk about. I came from Brazil and I was the only black person in my school and my community, and it was scary. And I never had someone else to relate to. And so I think when we go out into the world, we need to look at people who are different and say, hey, it's okay. And we're all different. I mean, what if we were all the same, right? Everybody says that. It would be boring.
The conference is just about wrapped up, and this group is busy making thank you cards for many businesses and sponsors of the event. From Cowichan Education Center in Cowichan Lake, April Butler Perry, The Island News.
Okay. Did we do it? We're working on our... No, we didn't. Okay, so what you're going to have to do is just stop it. And we'll rewind it. We'll rewind it. You think you stopped it right then? Okay, so it... Because it was... It's not just going forward now, eh? Yay! Okay, thank you. I'm technologically really incompetent. And so I really rely on people to keep me calm. I can do this. Okay, and I do think that pictures express thousands and thousands of words and activities get people learning more than just talking about it. So the videos are really important to me, and also us getting a little bit active a bit later on in our learning about inclusive leadership and about connecting kids and exploring diversity together, which is all the same thing. Okay. So when you think about this word inclusive travel guides, who are the people who are connecting kids, who are guiding children to explore diversity together, we work together, we share leadership. It's not something that one person just does alone. It's really fun because you get lots of people involved. And what we're doing is we're educating our children and our youth about our rights to live in a world that values differences. Marshall was talking about needs. And what we do with these at these inclusive leadership adventures, when we have them as conferences like this, is we just sit the kids down in small groups very early in the process and ask, what do you need to feel safe? What do you need to feel equally respected? What do you need to have fun here? What do you need to have choice? And the kids tell us what they want, and we write them up as ground rules. I've got some examples in here of the posters that they've made. You might want to look at it later at some of the pictures. And we just go for it. Kids tell us what we need, what they need. And it creates a culture, just like the La Leche League is creating a culture where children are highly valued and where the sounds are seen as gentle and beautiful rather than problems. It's the same thing. We're creating a culture where the differences are seen as positive, interesting, exciting, beautiful. This particular inclusive leadership adventure, I just want to honor the two organizations that were the main sponsors for it. I live in the community I live in has a very strong intercultural society. It's one of the sponsors, and the Canadian Mental Health Association, which highly values prevention programs for youth. And then a lot of businesses got involved in sponsoring that kind of getting kids together. But you don't have to do that. That's a big, you know, long several-day adventure. An adventure can be as short as just an afternoon as something that you do in your home. So I'll show you a few of those, too. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to give our children skills for respecting the right to be free from discrimination. I'm wondering if anybody here is a secret Star Trek fan like I am. Few people watch Star Trek. Does anybody watch Star Trek The Next Generation? A few people? Okay, it's just a show about exploring the universe, and there's this Starship Enterprise, and the captain of the Starship in The Next Generation, his name is Jean-Luc Picard, and he is a very decisive person. Somebody has an idea in his crew, and he always listens, and he says, make it so. And then they make it so. And I kind of, when I watch it, I laugh. And there's a lot of that kind of magical thinking that goes on in our world. I mean, oh, we have to create a policy. Make it so. We have to create a law. Make it so. And we try these things, but it doesn't happen by magic. It doesn't happen just because we've got a law now, just because we've got the universal rights of the child, just because we've got all these declarations and charters and everything. It doesn't automatically make it happen. It takes a lot of learning and a lot of relearning and a lot of communication, and it's the same with diversity education. So there's nothing automatic or magical about exploring diversity in inclusive ways. It's not something that comes naturally. It's not something that happens by magic. And if we don't do something about teaching the skills for it, it doesn't happen. Okay, it's not instinctive. So children and youth and adults all need guidance and skill development in order to learn how to travel outside what's familiar and feel relaxed about differences and start embracing differences, as I said in that tape. And it's only with guidance from inclusive role models that that's going to happen. It's only by creating a culture in which diversity is valued that this is going to happen. We'll put on the next transparency. So I call these skills for being socially responsible leaders connecting skills or inclusive leadership skills. I'm meaning the same thing. In the Connecting Kids book, I just use the word connecting skills, but I'm more and more using this word inclusive leadership or phrase. And so these are skills for exploring, sharing, and celebrating differences, and for building relationships that are safe and respectful and that are filled with choice and laughter. And I feel very strongly that that's the lack of these skills that is at the root of the huge problems that we're having in our schools and our neighborhoods with bullying and other forms of violence. I think there are attacks on differences. And unless we learn skills for connecting with others, these attacks on differences are going to continue because they are instinctive. They are automatic. They are unthinking. They are thoughtless. As people know, I'm a psychologist, and when we teach first-year psychology, we always teach people about something called the fight-flight response. Some people heard of that? Okay. The way our bodies are made, and this is not... this is hard science. It's not just something that somebody made up as, oh, this is our bodies are like this. Our bodies are this, okay? We've actually got two nervous systems. We have a nervous system that's used for learning, which is the relaxed nervous system. And we have a nervous system that turns on in emergencies. That's the fight-flight nervous system. Okay, they're two separate branches, and when one's on, the other one's off. Okay, you can't have them both on at the same time. So the only way people can learn is when we're relaxed. So like right now, I'm so nervous still that I can't learn. I'm not in a position to be able to learn from you. I will. I'll relax over the hour that we've got left together. But I can just survive. I know my stuff so I can get it out to you. Okay? I need to get over into that relaxed mode to be able to be open to learning. And the fight-flight response goes on, and we're in survival mode. We can do what we already know how to do, but we can't learn anything new. And so when kids meet up with differences, if they haven't learned these skills that I'm talking about, they go into the fight-flight response and do the things that are automatic, that they already know how to do. And most of it, the fight-flight response is fear and anger. Just gotta get some more water here. It's a response that tells you that something's an emergency, and you've either got to fight your way out of it or you've got to run away from it. And you learn different ways through life of doing that more and more effectively. I've learned that if I've got notes, I can fight my way out of anything. But when you're thinking about other things like kids, you know, what do they say about kids this age? I'm just looking over here at the little guy with the balloons. If you're in a group environment with children, you have a crisis about what? Once a minute. It's about. It's really fast that those crises start happening, and those fight-flight responses are turning on. And the adults around are helping kids relax, right? It's going, use your words, right? And making it into play and using diversion and all these skills that we know how to do. And we need to keep doing that kind of thing with kids. We leave them to their own devices far too early and think that they're automatically going to learn all the rest of the social skills they need to learn. Well, if we did that with the other subjects that our society thinks is important, we would have kids that don't know how to do math very well or reading very well or sports very well or know very much about the world. But this whole area of emotional intelligence, we just leave kids to learn naturally and they don't learn it naturally. What they do is they withdraw into groups of kids that are the same as each other and learn from each other. They're doing the best they can, but we've got them all divided by age, so they're only learning from other 4-year-olds or other 10-year-olds or other whatever-year-olds. And, so we've really, in North America, created a condition where we've got these increasingly diverse groups that children are expected to function in without the opportunities to learn the skills. Hardly any adults there to teach them. And a huge amount of diversity. Like, I don't know how many of you have visited a school recently since you were out of school? Number of you? Okay. They're way different than when you and I went to school. I'm 48. When I was in school, every single difference that was at all significant to the school system was excluded. Well, you go off to the special class for gifted children. You go off to the special class for mentally handicapped children. You better go and play sports. You better go into the vocational program. You know, and they just excluded. And so we didn't get to know kids from all different backgrounds. The kids with significant disabilities, we didn't get to know at all. We didn't have a lot of immigration happening 40, 50 years ago. We had some, more and more and more and more over the past 50 years. So our kids are going to schools where like tons of different languages spoken and different lifestyles and different ways of being together and a lot of mixing of economic diversity and all that. It's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful, but we have to learn these skills. We have to have some fun with it and stop just belly aching around about the terrible problem of bullying in the school and trying to punish the poor kids that are just doing the best they can. And I want to mention that when I travel to schools and I ask children and youth, who gets put down in your school? And I ask them, who gets excluded in your school? And I ask them, who gets bullied in your school? And you can ask that question and it's the same kids. The answer is the same for everyone. So we'll just start with put downs because kids are, you know, they're all put downs. You know, kids don't, they do it so much to each other, they don't even think that it's a sign of lack of skill, right? So who gets put down in your school? And without thinking, the instinctive response, and they come so fast, it's like, whoa, like that, okay? The unthinking, instinctive responses are the kids that are different. Right away. Don't even have to think about it. It's not learned, it's automatic. What kinds of differences get put down in your school? The list comes, and it comes quickly and fast. They know them all. They know it by rote. It's just there so often. What are they? We know them. Don't look.
Fat.
Too fat. The nerds. The nerds.
The color.
The color.
Dress differently.
Dress differently. Okay? Yeah, they're too smart. They're too dumb. They're too this. They're too that. They're whatever. We're the cool ones. Okay? What do you have to do to be cool? Not be different, that's for sure. Okay, so this is real. And you see the shoulders hunching up? Okay, I'm the same as everyone. I'm cool. And that's why I'm so passionate about this kind of work, because I'm seeing this so often. And I lived in two different countries in the South Pacific for a total of 3 years, where being different was not that big of a deal. And it was very relaxed, both countries that I lived in. And I think it's a lot to do with the countries being, I'm going back to the transparency that wasn't there before, the cooperative. When you've got a cooperative culture, you have a lot more respect for differences because cooperative groups can find a lot more places for people. Whereas competitive groups, there's only a few places that you can be on that ladder before you start getting kicked. So for a lot of kids, these are very, very disturbed and disturbing times. I think I'll tell my story about my freckles. This is the story I tell just to kind of prove that prejudice is instinctive. I mean, you can learn better and better ways of being more and more prejudiced from your parents or other kids or looking at society, but the actual fight-flight response to differences is instinctive. And then it's what we do as adults with kids. And what happens in the next few minutes and few seconds with the child's interaction with that whatever is being feared or whatever is being disliked that either reduces the prejudice or increases it. And so my freckles story is one of the ones I like to tell. I've got freckles. People see? They're a little less obvious than they used to be. When I was growing up, I really had freckles, okay? And, when I got out in the sun, they really came out. And, when I was, involved, in, the Asian community in my larger community of Vancouver, I had trouble with kids age 3 years old, especially taking one look at me and running away screaming. This happened more than once. And I asked a parent once, like, what's wrong? Like, why are the kids running away from me? Oh, it's because of your freckles. They've never seen them before. Oh, okay. And then when I lived in the South Pacific, I arrived on the plane the same day as another family. They were from the United States. And so we got to know each other quite well. We lived right down the street from each other. And the little girl, her name was Sarah, blonde little girl. She's 3 years old. She's growing up now in a country where she's a visible minority, but Federated States of Micronesia, people are Micronesian, they're very all one color, beautiful brownish, kind of like your color, very beautiful golden brown color. And so that's all she saw. She saw a beautiful golden brown color, and she saw her family, and she saw, you know, the few people that she knew. So one day she came up to me, and she says, Linda, yes, Sarah, what happened to your face? What do you mean? Well, when we were first on the plane together, you were so beautiful, and now you're so ugly. What happened to your face? And I said, well, I think you're talking about my freckles. Like, I've been out in the sun a lot. We're living in the tropics, right? And when the sun hits my face, these spots come out because that's the way my pigment is. And I thought I'd explain that to her. It's kind of like sunspots. I really like my freckles. I'm quite proud of them. She looks at me. She goes, I'm so sorry God made you that way. So to her, she saw that difference as a problem. And she had to do some learning about it to learn some skills for relaxing about that difference. It's not a big deal. Having freckles has no power imbalance implications. Like, it's not done anything harmful to me in my life. But it's just something that I know that proves to me what a researcher named Francis Aboud has found over and over again, that children as young as 2, maybe even younger, as soon as children become aware of differences, then that fight-flight reaction to differences starts, and they need learning to get over that. So that's what we're talking about with this whole thing of connecting kids and exploring diversity together. So, inclusive travel guides don't see differences as problems. We enjoy exploring differences, celebrating differences, sharing our differences, telling our stories, and we know that by doing this, we are building bridges towards a safer and more respectful world that's fun, that's got a lot of laughter in it. And together, we can cross these bridges to show these viewpoints that we see differences as treasures that enrich our communities. So I'm going to show the next video clip is 2 parents who I consider to be inclusive travel guides who were just with their son on an afternoon adventure in our community. So just to get the idea that you can do this anywhere. We'll just follow this little guy and his parents. That's good.
Okay, can you hear me now?
So the message that I'm trying to get across in that little clip is just that it's simple and easy, and we can all be inclusive travel guides and be proud of our own differences and our children's differences and the differences that we find in all the children that we interact with and the adults and youth, of course, in our communities. There's a saying that Confucius has, which is, if I tell you, you might forget. If I show you, you might remember. But if I involve you, we all might understand. And so I'm trying a few ways of getting us involved. I've also learned, my workshops used to be completely participatory, and people would go out and they'd have two responses. They'd go, oh, wow, that was fabulous. And then a few people would say, but what did we learn? So I've had to learn to get these points across too. and it's something that I'm still learning. So I'd like you to, I'd kind of like to challenge you. One of the skills in connecting kids is challenge by choice. So you've always got the choice. You don't have to take this challenge. But I'd like you to think about yourself as an inclusive travel guide for a minute. And to help you, I've got a riddle, which is the next transparency. So here's the riddle, which is, how are inclusive leaders like pipe cleaners? So if you can turn to somebody beside you and come up with a few answers, and we'll see what we come up with. There's lots of right answers to inclusive riddles. Yeah, how are inclusive leaders like pipe cleaners? Do you want to just ask? Okay, I think we've probably got a few answers coming up. So if you can help your, if you were the one that did most of the talking to your partner, how about if your partner tells what they heard? Flexible. Colorful. We're multicolored. Hey, yeah, okay, lots. Equals making lots. How about that? Is that good? Lots equals making lots of something? Putting lots together?
They can change.
They can change.
Stronger in numbers.
They're stronger in numbers. Okay.
They can mix.
They can mix. These are great answers. I've got to take this home with me. We've got way more in this room than I've had before.
They're fuzzy.
They're fuzzy. They're warm. Can I add in warm? Okay. Okay, inclusive leaders are warm and fuzzy.
It's hard to put them back where they started.
Oh, I love it. Okay, I was doing this in one school, and one of the kids put up his hand. He said, and
go like that for a minute.
Yeah, it says we can make a point when we need to. So it's about being assertive as well. So if you're a kinesthetic learner, which I see that a number of you are, you've done what kinesthetic learners do best, is you can make amazingly creative inventions. You can pick up other ones that aren't there, and that could be a diverse gift that you give away to someone, because as a symbol of sharing your diverse gifts, which is another, the skill of give and take is one of the connecting skills. Okay, so we've gotten started in a little bit of getting involved. I'd like us to play a bit of a game, again, trying to get people to see ourselves as inclusive travel guides. which is called Inclusive Leadership Seesaw, which is a standing up and sitting down kind of game. So I'm hoping that you'll be okay with that. What you do is, if this category applies to you, you stand up or jump up or whatever. And if it doesn't apply, you sit down. And you can stand up and sit down as many times as you want. So I'm just going to read out. This is from page 3 of the Connecting Kids book, which is titled, Inclusive Travel Guides Needed Now. So I'm looking for some. Are you a leader of a children's group? Woohoo! Okay, are you a coach of a sports team? Okay, are you a camp counselor? Okay, are you a parent? Are you a relative of a child? Okay, are you a friend or neighbor of a child? Okay, are you an early childhood educator? How about any babysitters? Anybody that's ever been a babysitter? Okay, good. Are you a teacher? Okay. Are you a anybody who helps children in a school? Okay. Do you have children in school? Okay. Are you a child and youth worker or a support worker or anybody who helps children through troubled times? Sure. Okay. Do you work with children with special needs? Are you friends with children with special needs? Do you volunteer with children with special needs? That's great. Whoa. Okay. Are you an ecologist? Are you a naturalist? Anybody who loves nature? That's all the naturalists in the room. Okay. Are you a magician? Woo! Are you a singer? Are you a musician? Are you an entertainer? Do you like the notion of playful parenting? Are you from a city? Are you from a village? Are you from a farm? Are you from anywhere else on our beautiful planet Earth? Whereabouts are you from? What kind of place?
I live on 3 acres outside of a town.
Okay. I'm originally from a city, but I currently live almost 8 acres in a rural community.
I grew up in what I guess would be maybe more of a village, and I live in a place that's a little bit bigger, but it's definitely not a city, so it's sort of somewhere rural and in between.
Originally from this city and live on 3 acres outside of a town.
So I'm going to have to add in, do you live on acreage? It's funny, I grew up in a subdivision. And I used to read those books that said, you know, you either lived in the city or the country, and all the books that I read growing up, and I go, well, where do I live? I couldn't find myself. Now there's lots of books about kids growing up in subdivisions. Okay. So it's just wonderful for me to be in a room with so many inclusive travel guides. Thank you for being here with me, and I hope you find this a bit adventurous. I'm going to show you another video that shows a little bit more about this approach to diversity education that's in the Connecting Kids book. And it's all about this process of replacing instinctive reflexes to avoid or fight against differences with a set of learned attitudes and skills for exploring, sharing, and celebrating differences. And so I'm going to ask for my friend Crystal, who's in this book, to help me tell her story, and then I'll be showing that, so it'll be about a minute. Okay, so Crystal was a 10-year-old girl. She was also hard of hearing, and so she didn't hear kids when they called her name. It was one of the things that, one of the little things that people hadn't noticed, I guess, as she'd grown up. The kids had noticed. They noticed she never turned around when they called her name, so they'd stopped calling her name. And when you think about being on the playground and how you normally get into groups, somebody calls your name and you run over and play with them. Or else you call somebody's name and run over and play. And it seems that both things have to happen. These kids that are labeled as snobs or shy, or as in Hope's case, she was hard of hearing and the kids labeled her as snobby and shy, haven't learned that you can also run up to kids and call their name and get involved in playing. And so she found recess to be really, really tough. And so she found a solution to recess, which was to sit on the steps and read books. So she was known as the girl who reads during recess. And so this went on very well for about her whole third grade and her whole fourth grade, and now she was in fifth grade. And she was trying this out again, but love was in the air. Right, fifth grade? Along came James. Well, James was a very strong personality. Has anybody ever read the book The Spirited Child? Okay. Well, he was very, very spirited. And spirited children get all sorts of labels, which he had all of them. So officials would say, oh, there's James. He has ADHD, you know, or whatever else. And so this kid was running around the school madly, being very spirited, being looked at askance by all the authority figures. That ADHD is acting up again. You know, we'll have to get him into the principal's office, and maybe we shouldn't have him have as many recesses. And then, of course, he'd be bouncing all over the school for the whole rest of the day. Anyway, so James had a real difficult time also at recess, also during school, also all the time, which was too bad because he's one of the most brilliant young guys I've ever met, as you'll see in the videotape. So James was bouncing around the playground one day. None of the kids would play with him. They'd heard that he was called ADHD, and he was really rough anyways. He was a real difficult guy to be welcoming to and to include. He kind of wrecked everything that he, you know, bull in the china shop kind of be, can I play? You know, and jump in and things shatter and stuff. So the kids tended to move off when James was around. So everybody was moving off. Crystal was happily reading her book, and he kept seeing Crystal as he ran by. She was there. She was the only stable thing in his environment. Everybody else was against him, but Crystal was always there reading her book, and so he fell in love and started chasing Crystal madly all around. And Crystal had to leave her books and retreat to the safety of her bedroom, where she refused to ever go to school again. And so Crystal was referred to a psychologist. And I did with Crystal what I do with everybody who gets referred to me. We sit down, chat, find out what's going on, chat with her mom, that kind of thing. Crystal was really clear on what was going on. She told me the whole story. It took about 5 minutes. I said, you don't need to come to a counselor. We need to get out there on the playground and fix this situation. She said, yeah, we sure do. So I said, well, let's get a Building Friendly Bridges group going, which is what I do with any kid that's referred to me. I always think of a reason to get a Building Friendly Bridges group going. And so we did. So I helped Crystal think of the names of a few kids that she wanted to be in this group. And she thought of some girls that she wanted to play with. So, and some boys that she thought should be less rough. And that included James. And so we invited them all, and they all wanted to be in this group, which was at lunch hour. And their parents all said it was fine for them to be in the group, and the school was great about it. And so we had a Building Friendly Bridges group. And I use videotape a lot when I work with kids, and this particular group was like magic. It really was. Make it so, make it so. Make a videotape of it. I was really just holding this videotape, catching the kids using their skills, and when I sat down and looked at it, then I would play it back to the kids to reinforce and strengthen what we were learning. And when I looked at it, I thought, oh, this is amazing. And so I kind of put a lot of work into editing it. I'm quite proud of it. So we'll let the kids tell their story. Okay? We used the Judds as the title song. Love can build every dream. some of you may recognize the Judd's video so far.
This is what I learned about building bridges. Always help each other and notice each other's differences. Some people may not be the same as you, or they may not have any friends, so don't tease them.
Building friendly bridges means asking to join in and including anyone who wants to join in.
Fantastic.
I mean, as long as we follow the rules.
People are letting people play so that someone doesn't have anywhere to play and they ask somebody. But if you don't let you,
building friendly bridges means touch control so that no one gets hurt and everybody gets along.
That's James. A little bit of technical difficulties here. Oh, here's the technical difficulties.
best words for that?
This is Crystal.
Lots and lots of fun.
What are you doing differently now?
I'm not playing sports by myself, but asking other people and letting people join in. People are now asking people to join in a friendly game of basketball or soccer or whatever, and they ask them, and they say yes. They tell them the rules of touch controllers, some problems. Sometimes what happens is when the person practices it when the adults run, but sometimes it doesn't really happen when the adults run around. And then lots of other skills.
This is James.
And there's two kids that have been in another one, and they probably know all those things already too. Because if you look through it often enough, it can be put into practice and used. I mean, the knowledge is all up here. I think everybody knows it.
Some more than others, but putting it into action, a lot of people know. So you can see why I just have so much admiration for James. I ran into Crystal's mom just a couple of months ago, and she was telling me that when those two became teenagers, they dated for a short time. So what we're doing as Inclusive Travel Guides is we are constantly developing our own skills for connecting across differences and for passing these skills on to children in playful ways. And kids learn these skills as easily as kids learn anything. Okay, you saw the comfort of those kids. They learn it through activity, not through just talking about it. But they can talk about it because, of course, kids have words. But you can learn it non-verbally, too. You don't have to know all those words to be able to use the skills. And so you can learn as easily as learning to read or play a musical instrument or help out with chores or play sports or paint a picture, build a fort. You can learn as easily as learning anything. And we learn in the same ways. We watch, we listen, we get feedback. Now, the natural way that children relax and open up to learning these skills, because remember, getting back to the fight-flight response, we need to set up conditions where we're relaxed. You can't intervene in, you know, the middle of a fight or the middle of a flight is not a teachable moment, right? So the natural way that children relax and turn on their system for learning is through play. That's the natural way children learn to relax, play and shared laughter. And play, I believe, is wired into children. I do this work over and over again. I love doing this work with intergenerational groups where we've got about the same number of kids as adults in the room. We would have been done lecturing for about 5 minutes. And when you've got kids, we learn it through play. If we say to a group, okay, who wants to do activity-based learning and who wants to do talking-based learning? All the kids are over there for activity-based learning, and 90% of the adults are here. I'm waiting for my talking-based learning. I really like talking-based learning. And, you know, that learning to sit and listen and stop taking risks, I think, is something that Marshall Rosenberg was talking about last night. That fear of looking stupid, that fear of wondering, that fear of giving the response that might get laughed at, that fear of put-downs that's happened so easily because all of us have differences that have been put down thoughtlessly as we've grown up. And so it becomes safer and safer just to sit and listen and take notes. Which is a good way to learn, but we've got to get out to action. Kids need action. They can't learn this way. And what we're trying to do is connect with kids and pass this on to kids. So we go the natural way that kids relax and open up is by playing. Play is children's work. Where's those early childhood educators again? Could you please form a society like the La Leche League and get the whole world playing again?
Have you ever heard of Society for Developmental Education?
I have. Okay.
I have their buttons that say childhood, one chance of a lifetime. Play is learning or something like what you just said. And 10 ways to better reading. Read
That's great. And then play as you read. Play while reading. No, it's kids are, you know, kids love being active, and that's the natural way. Our bodies are meant to be active and learn through, especially, you know, through all our senses. What happens when we play? I'll tell you what happens, is the world becomes simple. You watch kids play over and over and over again. Beautiful patterns again and again and again. There's always some surprises, but they come in little bits. They're not huge and overwhelming like this hotel. Whoa, this isn't a very playful environment, I say as I get lost, going up and down to my room, trying to find which elevator to go in, whatever. This is a very beautiful hotel, but I have found it very overwhelming. And there's hundreds of inclusive leadership skills or connecting skills or whatever kind of skills you want to call these, social skills. There's just hundreds and hundreds of them. In the Connecting Kids book, I've described 20 that I think are quite important. And then there's hundreds of activities that are, each skill is organized according to, then there's a whole bunch of activities. And it's really just playing the activities. You don't really have to know what skill. Like, you can be teaching 25 skills at once, right? The kids are learning them. They don't have to know, oh, this is I'll Be Your Partner. Oh, this is Challenge by Choice. Oh, this is Touch Control. As they get older, they start learning to put those words to the skills. But it does help us for organizing them. You had a question? Sure. So the question was, could you talk about touch control? I will. I'll read you about touch control, okay? Okay. I spent so much time writing these words, I might as well read them. Okay, touch control and other safety skills. If you watch any skilled athlete, you will see touch control in action. Skiers learn to hurtle down steep slopes without crashing into other skiers, trees and other obstacles. Basketball players can handle a ball so skillfully that it looks like a dance. Figure skaters, acrobats, those are some everyday examples of touch control that we see really skilled people doing. Some other examples of touch control that maybe some of us do. This guy's using a lot of touch control right now. Okay. So it's boundaries. It's being able to shake hands without hurting someone, lining up without pushing, respecting privacy, respecting personal boundaries. Those kinds of things are all touch control. And kids begin learning touch control from early childhood onwards. So right now we're watching an adult educator using playful parenting techniques to teach touch control, as well as a number of other things. Okay, so it just happens in our daily lives. We do it. Can we have a hand for the adult educator who's teaching touch control? Okay. I had a grade 6 teacher who talked about touch control a lot. She didn't use those words. I started using those words because they seemed to get the idea, the message across to kids. There's I'm trying to remember his name. There's a social skill described called touching the right way. And because our world is so sexualized, you can't say that to kids. So I started thinking, okay, what's another way we could describe this skill? So I just said touch control. It just seemed to be a neutral way that kids think is cool. Oh, I got touch control. I'm cool. Okay, it's better than, oh, I touch the right way. They really go into weird stuff with that one. So that's why I called it touch control. Boy, living for 3 years in two countries that were not sexualized was very, very different and very relaxing for me. And, you know, this country that we live in, where we've got so much sexual imagery everywhere that kids learn from such an early age that our bodies are all about sex and that's it. It's sad. But anyway, that's why we're involved in revolutions, right? Okay. So anyway, my grade 6 teacher used to say, your freedom ends where another's begins. And that awareness is touch control. Children who have good touch control are able to interact with each other safely, even in crowded places, and even when playing fast-paced, high-energy sports such as karate or soccer. So touch control does not mean slowing down and sitting in your seat and never moving again. Okay? Children who are skilled at touch control know when and how to touch without being rough or without otherwise making others feel uncomfortable or unsafe. And I guess one of the things, I'm glad you asked about touch control because it's such an important skill, and it goes along with another skill in this book called No Go Tell. One of the really sad things to me as I've started giving lectures about connecting kids through play is that quite a number of adults find this very traumatizing, to even be sitting here in the room. Some of you may be traumatized, or you may have had that experience when you're educating about La Leche to somebody, where, no, that's dirty. Okay? There are so many children who have been exploited and learn that contact through two people with your bodies is dirty, that playing together can go in dirty directions. It's one of the main grooming tools used, unfortunately, for abusing children. So it's a lot of work that we've got to do to give kids the skill of touch control and the skill of no-go-tell, to be able to know what your own boundaries are and know it's, above all, it's safety. It's equal respect. It's choice and it's fun. And if those four things aren't being met, then you no go tell and get out of there and go tell. Okay? Who grew up with the myth of tattletaling and don't tell? Who was told you don't tell? Okay, a lot of us were. That's bullies. That's bullies talking. That's the ultimate grooming tool for bullies. Oh, don't tell. Don't be a tattletale. Okay? That's people that have learned to control through exclusion, to control through you do what I say and don't tell. And if you do, you're a tattletale. Bully environments are filled with that rule. That's one of the ways that you can tell a bully environment, if you've got that rule. It's a bully environment. The army, yeah. Very vertical bully environment, sure. So if you've got that rule happening, you're in a bully environment, and it's very hard to get these kinds of skills happening there. You're working on a cross-cultural, big cross-cultural tensions there. Yeah.
They're wrong, I'm right, Tommy hit, I didn't.
Yeah, so
all you have to do is validate that you're right, Tommy should not have hit you.
Okay, and I'm just going to very quickly summarize that into the mic for Digitel. So the idea being that tattletaling is often not really tattletaling, it's checking out to see, does the world really work this way? I was doing a leadership training with a group of adults and kids, and we played all morning, and the adults were really wanting to sit and talk. And so we sent the kids outside, which is, these were the leader, you know, they were grade 6 leadership kids. And so they went outside, and 15 minutes later, one of the kids came in, and he said, "There's a need for adult supervision out here." Okay? And so I went out. And sure enough, one of the kids was planning to go swimming. We were on a lake. You know, there was a need for adult supervision. And he made a decision to go, you know, it was a safety issue, and to go and tell. And I was really glad that he didn't have that rule so ingrained that he had let that happen, and that we'd had a, you know, kid either least worst come in all wet, at worst have some kind of accident, you know. So that ability to, that no-go tell is another skill. Okay, so that's touch control. So what I'm going to do is show you a video with all these skills in it. Is that all right for people? You okay with that? This is a collage. What I did is I thought, well, it's easy to find these skills in the real world, right? You just have to look around you and you can see these skills in action. You know, just because I can. Here's the skill of give and take happening right before our very eyes. So it's really easy. So I thought, well, I can look through my video footage from some of the videos that I've done. And then I didn't find enough, so I went a bit further and I looked at a wonderful movie called Harriet the Spy. Super movie, all about exploring diversity. So there's some scenes from that. And then National Film Board in Canada has some really good films, lots of really good films about diversity. It's the whole film board is set up on that way. And there's a series called Playing Fair And so there's a few scenes from that. And then there's some special education videos as well. So I kind of collage them all together. It's about 10 minutes long, and it goes through each skill. So you can get an idea of what I'm talking about when I'm meaning all these skills. Okay?
Joining the circle. Joining the circle involves gathering in a group, welcoming each other, following directions, and paying attention to each other in order to do things together. Modeling. Modeling is whatever we're doing while people who admire us and want to be like us are watching. We teach and learn almost everything by modeling and copying. Breaking the ice. Breaking the ice means warming the atmosphere in ways that release tension, energize the group, build trust, and open up everyone's creativity. Participatory pacing. Participatory pacing is when you set an active pace while making smooth transitions and individual adjustments to keep everyone involved. Paying close attention to feedback from the participants is the key.
We are it.
I'll be your partner. I'll be your partner involves doing things with different people instead of always sticking with the same partner. All games and activities can be adapted in ways that children can play in partners or in small groups. Good! Give and take. Just like having a conversation or playing a game of catch, give and take means giving something, accepting what is being offered back, and then giving something else in return. Watch the growing wall skip for another demonstration of give and take.
Roll the girl. Good. Yeah, a big girl.
Think ball. Sure, make it work.
Whoa, look at this. Wow, a beautiful girl like a kid on it.
Touch control and other safety skills. Touch control is about respecting physical boundaries. Children begin learning touch control from early childhood onwards. They learn when and how to touch without being rough or otherwise making others feel uncomfortable or unsafe.
Secret tattoo. My best friend's sport, Jamie, and I thought we should be blood buddies. But this was so much less painful.
Daring to be different. Daring to be different means building pride in each other's unique gifts, talents, abilities, disabilities, special qualities, cultural backgrounds, and lifestyles that make the world a more interesting place.
Why can't we just be whatever, anything?
Following the leaders behind you. Following the leaders behind you involves seeking out contributions from people on the outskirts. The leaders in the back of a group can see things from different angles, and they can view things in completely new ways.
I have something to say. If we only listen to one person's opinion, we may never get anywhere new.
Understanding in any language. Learning to understand in any language is acquiring the ability to listen carefully with your heart, eyes, and ears to many different kinds of communication. Relax, repeat back what you understand, and accept support from interpreters when needed. When children are in tune, they can all be heard. Bringing in the reinforcements. Bringing in the reinforcements means strengthening each other's abilities and confidence by getting involved in activities and interactions that immediately lead to enjoyable results and positive feedback. Giving a hand. Giving a hand is offering to help in ways that guide others to safety or to more choice, more power, and more fun. Sharing, doing something for someone, hand-over-hand guidance, showing, and comforting are all ways of giving a hand. Offstage prompting. Offstage prompting is when you give cues through words, pictures, or actions that help others figure out what to do or say next. Prompting without coming across as nagging is a real balancing act.
Put your hand in the field in the picture of this is a horse.
A horse goes
neigh. How about the hand in the
field?
One, two, three. Leaving out losing involves adapting games and activities so that no one gets left out or eliminated. Everyone has more fun when children play with each other instead of against each other. Keeping cool when things get hot means staying calm and remembering to encourage others even when you are under pressure. Children can learn to keep cool by taking part in activities that are difficult but not impossible.
Perseverance, patience.
Determination.
Yeah. And understanding, because she's really compassionate. I don't know.
Practicing tolerance. Practicing tolerance involves steadfastly ignoring something that bothers you, while at the same time searching for positive aspects of the person or the situation to support and strengthen.
Come on, Jamie. Remember what it was like earlier? Same thing.
No go tell means standing up for safety.
Well, open the door. I have homework to do. Come on, it'll be fine. I thought you would be my friend.
This is done by saying no to dangerous or potentially dangerous situations, going away, helping others to get away, and perhaps telling someone who can help you. Challenge by choice means taking realistic risks within a safety net of trust, mutual caring, and confidence. Daring to stretch and try leads to growth and turns life into an exciting adventure.
Go, come on, go. There's no bird. Hey, open yourself up. Inventing new possibilities involves solving problems and overcoming barriers by sharing ideas, trying experiments, and coming up with new ways of doing things.
You know, there are as many ways to live as there are people in this world, and each one deserves a closer look.
So are there any questions? And I'd like to keep them to about 5 minutes so that we can do a couple of participatory activities to practice a couple of those skills. So any questions first? And maybe what we could do is have questions into the mic, because that will help those CD-ROM things that they're making.
You had talked about starting a group of this Building Bridges at a school. Is this a program that's ever used on a school-wide basis? And how is it implemented? Who gets trained to do it? How does that work?
Okay. Inclusive leadership is not a program. It's about relationships. Anyone can do it. So the first thing is, there are whole schools who have really taken on the philosophy of being inclusive, and it really is a revolution in the school. There's there's a lot of work going on at a number of universities in the inclusive education movement, and it's mainly started with special education. That's that word inclusion, and what really is upsetting to me is when I look at the use of that word. We've gone through in education, like the mainstream society takes what it wants and uses it for the purposes of mainstream society. Okay, so a revolution doesn't mean mainstream society just taking the words you use and say that they're doing it, but still doing the same thing they always did. So what I'm sad about seeing now is programs that used to be called integrated programs are now called inclusion programs. Which is just, and the word inclusion, if I use it in education, it's seen in Canada anyways as just being a substitute for the word special education. And there's a lot of cynicism about the use of that word. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about being inclusive, learning to be welcoming. I'm talking about learning to communicate in nonviolent ways. I'm talking about banding together with all of our allies who are doing this and making our schools, making our homes, making our neighborhoods, making all the places kids live, work, learn, and play that I have a sphere of influence over, and that each of us has a sphere of influence. So the way I've been approaching this is through this whole idea of sphere of influence, that the power of one, it's that we just look, I just look at what I can do and do it and help other people do it too. So one of the things that I do have a sphere of influence over is I love camps. I think that the camp culture sending your kids to camp, but better off going to camp with your kids. That's a place that the power of play is still really strong for, like, all the way up. It's been a bit exploited by the corporate sector, sort of adventure programming, taking people off to have war games and stuff. That's not what I'm talking about. But you can have inclusive camps, and I found that that's creating a huge impact in my community, because people are getting a taste of what it's like, and then they're going off and doing other wonderful things. So even though I have this pamphlet here, Inclusive Leadership Adventures, I on purpose did this. I didn't put any contact information on it. It's just got my card. Well, you can take this and put your name on it and go and have an inclusive leadership adventure. You can come and learn more about how to guide inclusive leadership adventures. Once a year, I do what I'm calling advanced inclusive leadership training. And the only reason I say advanced is because I'm trying to get people there. People like, oh, it's advanced, I'll come. Must be good. Do I get credit for it? Certainly, you get lots of play credits. No. And actually, it is accredited and will get accredited more and more, because it really is a pretty powerful learning opportunity. So in 2004, and probably in about May, do it once a year, you can come to camp for a week. And it's just fabulous. And we go through, because it doesn't, you can't change consciousness in 2 hours, right? I get very frustrated. I'm really glad to be invited. But this is just like a little motivation. So I would love to see you at Advanced Inclusive Leadership Training in May. We also invite youth and adults who care about youth to come to our youth conferences. I try to do those twice a year, and I encourage people, like one's going on right now. I'm not even there. This is so exciting. People came to a youth leadership conference, and then they came to the next one, and then they came to the advanced training, and then they got one going in their community. So it's happening right this week, an inclusive leadership camp in Campbell River, which is just north of where I am. But people have come from back east and parts of the states and stuff, so it's just kind of a little movement. There's other people doing this, though. One thing I want to say is, if you see a Buddha on the road, kill it. That's one of the Buddhist teachings. And what it means is, like, watch out for gurus, eh? We all have the power to, especially to guide the people within our sphere of influence and to be leaders. And inclusive leadership is shared. So nothing would make me happier than if more and more people are just kind of using the language and getting involved in it. There's some other really good programs around. Maybe some of us could share the ones that you know about. The Virtues Project has some really wonderful things happening with it. And that also started in British Columbia on Salt Spring Island, right next door to me. Any other really wonderful inclusive or diversity education projects that other people here know about? Okay. There's a few listed in the back of this book. And on the Earth Charter website, there's a lot of people doing work related to the Earth Charter with youth, with children and youth, and it seems to really be connecting well. I'm really enjoying the contact I'm having with those people. So people involved in the peace movement, peace education with kids. My publishers have lots of books. New Society Publishers, if you go on their website, have a lot of books. And they have one book that's been adopted by the La Leche League, which is about, I can't remember the title of it, but it's about long-term breastfeeding with your child and long-term physical relationships with your child and how to work on that.
You just asked about other programs. Are you familiar with Outrageous?
Outrageous?
Artrageous.
Artrageous! Yes, I've heard of it, and it's fabulous. This is where they've got a lot of wonderful tools as well that's been developed through Artrageous. Like really neat art supplies as well as the actual...
Particularly familiar with it, but I know there are a lot of collaborative projects that they do with groups of children that just enhance the cooperative nature. You know, they do a mural where each child moves every minute, so you don't own a piece of the mural, and they each paint in the same places. And
so that kind of thing, like you can hear that and say, oh, I can You don't have to wait for a program. You don't have to wait. This stuff is not copyrighted. Anybody who tries to copyright play, okay, it's not copyrighted. Copy, copy, copy. Use modeling. That's the most effective way of learning. Hearing about something, trying it out. So the next time you're with kids, do a mural and have them move every minute. Okay, time to move. Just see what it's like. See what happens, and then it'll be us doing it, right? Okay. Any other questions? Comments? Okay. There's a article, and if anybody wants to, if you want to email me, I can send you more stuff. So there's an article, and I can email you either or fax it to you or something. It's a wonderful article. It's called, and there's a book that it's based on as well. The article is called You Can't Say You Can't Play. And that's the title of the book too. And it's about, the book is about a kindergarten teacher who tried to make that rule happen in her classroom and about how difficult it was for the kids to have that rule. A lot of tensions came. And then Maria, there's a wonderful author, and I should, since this is on, Mara Sapon-Sheben. Has anybody heard of Mara? Okay. Mara is involved in inclusive education, and she's written a book that's got a lot of the technical information. I like these two books together. Like, Connecting Kids has a lot of the how-to stuff, and Mara's has a lot of the technical stuff. And it's also, for people in the United States, it's very culturally, talks about civic responsibility. It uses language that's used in the United States a lot, so it helps educators figure it out. Anyway, her book is called Because We Can Change the World, A Practical Guide to Building Cooperative, Inclusive Classroom Communities. And her stuff is as close to mine as I've seen in that kind of love of play and love of all diversity and that kind of thing. But it's the same thing, like, we can all do it. You don't have to have written a book to be an inclusive travel guide. I guess that's the point I'm trying to get across. Like, let's just get out there and do it. It's stuff that we've learned from early childhood, and being part of the La Leche League organization, people already have tons of those skills, like active listening being the base of diversity education and also being the base of La Leche, play being one of the bases of La Leche. So there's so many crossovers. So I guess I just want to say, like, I'm very... maybe this word isn't a very popular word, so I'll use a different word. I was going to use the word anarchy, but I won't use that word. I'll instead use the word disorganized. I'm very disorganized. I just believe that you just do a little bit here and there and everywhere, and it's like seeds. It's like beautiful gardens, and it all starts growing, and I just know it will. And it is. And it's urgent, because there's a lot of working on... Yes?
Can you address the thing on the video where the little girl said it works well when the adults are around? Because as a second grade teacher, I can identify with that.
Yeah. I think that's such a wonderful statement of the importance of adults in children's lives. We are important. We can't just leave kids on their own to play. You know, friend of mine... who's the... I wonder if I've got time to show that. I think I do. There's a wonderful program in my community called Growing Together Daycare. And it's a daycare that is connected with an alternate high school. And so it's a daycare for young parents who are trying to stay in school or who are staying in school. And the woman who runs the daycare... one of her things, like, I'm always going on, television is sort of the thing that we have to get rid of. And she says, yeah, television and rec rooms. Like, the idea of throwing all the kids down the basement to go play in the rec room while the adults do something else upstairs. She just thinks is just like, let's just keep this intergenerational stuff going and stop separating our kids from their adults. What would you rather do? That's fine. We can. I'm going to end with an action song that we'll all do. So for the next 5 minutes, we could go for an elephant ride, which involves playing with balloons, or we could watch a video on watching the young parents inventing new possibilities, or we could create a poem. Hmm? Okay, we'll watch the video, and then we'll do our action song at the end and get a little bit of action in. So I'll just quickly tell the story of... So these are young parents in the Growing Together. They go to a school called the Cowichan Valley Cooperative Learning Center, and their kids are in this daycare, and then a few times a week they get parenting classes. And the class that I get to teach is called Playful Parenting, which I think is neat because one of the workshops offered here is called Playful Parenting. I'm wondering how similar it is. I use Connecting Kids as the textbook, and each student gets a copy. It's not specifically geared at parents and toddlers, but it really seems to work because the skills are all ages, and these young parents really need the skills, right? So they get to learn the skills. So what we do is we do we focus on one skill a week, and the sessions are 2 hours long, or two periods long, maybe sort of two 40-minute periods. The first period, it's just the young parents with me and the book, and we go through and do whatever we're doing. So the skill on the videotape is inventing new possibilities, which is divergent thinking, being able to be creative. And so they're working on that, which is they're making puppets for their kids. And then the kids come in and they play with their kids. And the only thing that was kind of funny is we also had to work snack time in there. And so we decided that we would just do snack time and play time all together. And it's just a schmoz. You'll see. So I'll just show that video, which means I have to do it. Okay. I can handle this. So now their kids have come in. So I hope that gives an idea of how simple it is and how serious some parents can be about playful parenting. A lot of young parents have had their childhoods, lost their childhoods long before they got pregnant. And so what we find in these groups is about half of the young parents feel comfortable with playing, and about half of them haven't played very much during their childhoods, and about one in every group is severely traumatized. And there's a story about a young dad who got through his trauma in the Connecting Kids book, so I just kind of encourage you to read it. It's I'm just thinking more and more about how La Leche League... I'd like to hear more about how La Leche League is involved in supporting young parents, so maybe afterwards somebody can teach me about that. So we'll just end with a song and the skill of modeling. I just have to rewind this song. So, the fellow who wrote the preface to Connecting Kids is a wonderful family entertainer named Rick Scott from Canada, but he travels all over the world. And I love his music. To me, it really speaks about diversity, and I really love... He does keynote addresses. If you ever want a wonderful keynote speaker, I would really highly recommend Rick Scott. He does a musical keynote talking about his explorations of diversity and kids and play, and it's just a wonderful experience. So after I met him, which was by sitting in a workshop like this, or a keynote kind of thing, more like Marshall Rosenberg's, and listening to him, I got up the nerve to ask him to write the preface to my book, and found out that he's really not all that famous after all. I mean, what is fame? You know, just because you've... I learned that from Rick. So not very many people know about Rick. I hope more people know about him, because his music is just wonderful. So this song is called My Family, and I'm going to sign it. Signing is really important to me. I have one of the ways that I learned about diversity has been from the deaf community. I have a sibling who's deaf, and have been on that journey, which involves two different languages coming together, signing and speech-based languages. And so I'll just teach you a few kind of signs to go with the chorus, if you can help me with that, and then I'll sign the rest of it. So it's oh, what do you see? Okay, so you go, oh, what do you see? And then you go, look out. Look out. World. So, what do you see? Look out, world. That's the one you have to do fast. And then you say my. It's a pretty easy gesture. And then family is showing a group with your hands. Okay, so we'll go through. Oh, what do you see? Look out, world. It's my family. Okay, and you can stand up if you want.
See? colors are in my family. I wonder if any of them are blue. Oh, now what do you see? Hey, look out, world, it's my family. Oh, now what can it be? Hey, look out, world, it's my family.
For the rest of the day, I'd love to have conversations with any of you who are here, and best of luck with the rest of the conference, and thank you for being such a wonderfully revolutionary group.